The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, December 19th, 2022.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do. Because the woman in your life is you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. With me at the board is my friend, my partner, my engineer, my co-producer, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, and happy solstice.
Oh, my goodness, that's right. Solstice is on. Wow, the year has just gone by so fast. I have a very special guest with me this morning. If you remember, I don't know if folks remember, we had a little bit of technical difficulty last week, but we're going to be able to bring Mary Norman on the phone. So I have a very special guest joining me on the phone from Eugene, Oregon, is Mary Norman, activist and producer and host of the radio show Voices for Social Justice. We're going to be in conversation about two of the most reverend women in Christianity, Mary, Mother of Jesus, and Mary Magdalena, a disciple of Jesus. I am excited about this show, and the goal is to get some clarity on who these women were and what important impact they had on women as well as religion. And here we are in a holiday season. I mean, Christmas is at the end of the week. I believe Christmas Eve is Saturday evening, and then everybody will be celebrating Christmas Day on Sunday. And right now, the Jewish people are celebrating a Hanukkah. You know, thanks to my brother Mark, who always calls me up on the phone, do you have Hanukkah candles? And he's going out today to get me some. I couldn't believe it. We actually had two when we took out our menorah, so we had enough for last night. I felt like it was we were kind of into the ancient story. You know, Hanukkah has a real interesting history. You know, Ken and I were talking before we went on the air. It's actually not mentioned in the Bible, but it's still a tradition. And it seemed way back when there was a war between, I believe, the Syrians and the Maccabees. And what the Syrians were trying to do was destroy the temple, the Jewish temple. And what happened is they lost the war. The Maccabees took over again and went back into the temple. And they saw that the light that burned every day all the time was still burning, but they felt they only had one day of light, and they send a carrier out, like, you know, like maybe a UPS guy or somebody out to get some oil so they could burn in the temple. And he was gone for 8 days. And for some reason, the oil, was that correct, Ken? The oil burned for 8 days.
Yeah, they only had enough oil to burn one day, but instead it burned for 8 days.
Right, and they thought that as a miracle. And so that became the tradition of Hanukkah. And the way that the Jewish people celebrate it is we have a menorah, and the menorah has 8 candles on it. Actually, it has 9 sections because we do 8 candles. And then in the middle, there's what is called the host candle, and that you light all the candles. So on day one, you light 1 candle. Day two, you light another candle. And before you know it, you have all 8 candles lit. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful sight. And it's also another way to give acknowledgement to the miracle of life, the miracle of things that happen unexpectedly to us, you know, like the parking lot fairy and things like that. But this was the miracle to the Jewish people, and it's a tradition, and it's celebrated every single year. And as I was growing up, that was the way it was. Every Hanukkah, we lit the candles. And it was so interesting, because when you to start thinking about it, even though it wasn't it was not in the Bible, you still recognize that this was all happening during Jesus's time, and he himself was Jewish, so he must have been celebrating Hanukkah at some point. And the fun part of Hanukkah is that, you know, you get a present every single day for the 8 days, where, you know, Christmas, you're under the Christmas tree, you get one present. But with Hanukkah celebration, you get a present every single day. And I remember when I was growing up, sometimes my grandmother would give me a pair of socks, or she would give me a little bow or something. It was just simple little gifts, but we got a gift every single day for the 8 days and did many, many prayers. So this is a very wonderful time of the year. We have Christmas come. We have Christmas in front of us. We're enjoying Hanukkah today, and tomorrow, you know, is this. Oh, actually, today's the 19th. The solstice is on the 21st. So we have the whole solstice coming up. So there's a lot to be grateful for. And the most important thing, I believe, in this time of the year is really to recognize the beauty of the mystery that we live in. It is just amazing. So happy Hanukkah to all my Jewish friends out there. And anybody can get a menorah and light the candles and celebrate this wonderful miracle. Maybe lighting the candles will help bring a miracle into your life. I'll tell you, folks, you know, when you look around, you see what's going on, you know, I pray for peace. I mean, here we are celebrating, you know, everybody's running around in a frenzy to try to buy gifts and do all the whatever the traditional things they do. But the bottom line is we are celebrating the birth of the peace, the Prince of Peace that was supposed to bring peace and love on earth. And when you look around, we do not have peace. You know, people believe in heaven and hell. You know, when I die, I want to be a good person. I want to go to heaven. Or if I'm a bad person, I'm going to go to hell. I don't believe in that. I believe we make our heaven and hell right here on earth. I mean, wars are hell. You know, at the same time, I went to a recital with my great-granddaughter, Satori, performed in Petaluma. It was just amazing. What was it? Do you remember the name of the dance club that it was?
Studio 6.
Studio 6. It was just amazing.
It was a dance school.
It was a school, and it's a dance school. It's amazing to see the different levels. And there was my little great-granddaughter, Satori, up there looking out of the audience, you know, but she knew her steps. I mean, that kid is so determined to do the right thing, and she knew her steps. And it was just, for me, looking at all those beautiful children dancing, moving their bodies, the youth, just the energy of youth was so amazing to me. And I went in my mind, I said, this is our future. Our youth is our future, and we must invest in them. A lot of young people are discouraged today. We have to bring them up and realize that there is hope in this world. And I want to do a shout out to Satori and to my whole family. We had a wonderful, wonderful time. Just enjoyed each other, enjoyed the dance, enjoyed watching all those young people perform. It was just amazing to me. I don't know, maybe I'm a little bit too sentimental, or maybe I get a little bit too emotional, I'm not sure. But we have to recognize our children of the future. We were once children. You know, Hitler himself was a child. Trump himself was a child. You know, what happens to these young, beautiful entities, these little miracles that come up? What makes someone love and what makes someone hate? I mean, these are the questions we need to ask, because we're never going to find peace on earth if we don't understand what is in each and every one of us that supports some of this violence. Even though we say we don't support it on very subtle ways, we support things that really are not in our best interest, and we need to look at that. Well, as we do every Monday morning, and I'm going to repeat it over and over. Why do I do this? Because our history is our strength. And as women, we must recognize whose shoulders we are standing on. And when I read the history of some of these women, I am totally, absolutely, totally blown away at the courage they have and their willingness to stand up for what they believe. And we are standing on the shoulders of many, many great women. Well, here's something that happened very interesting. On December 20th, 1954, Sandra Casarios, an American Latina writer best known for her acclaimed first novel, The House on Mango Street. This is very interesting. She was given an award. And, you know, The House on Mango Street is very interesting. I look it up. I love doing this section because I'm learning so much myself. The House on Mango Street is considered a modern classic of Chicano literature and has been the subject of numerous academic publications in Chicano studies and feminist theory. The book has sold more than 6 million copies, has been translated into over 20 languages, and is required reading in many schools and universities across the United States. Now, here's a Hispanic woman in 1954. you know, when we really were, I would say at the time that I was growing up, the height of, you know, only, you know, Hispanics, Native, black people, they were not the exhilarated people. And here's a woman that writes this, House in Mango Street. It sells over 6 million copies in 20 languages. It's just amazing to me. Because the novel deals with sensitive subject matters such as domestic violence, puberty, sexual harassment, and racism, it has faced the challenges and threats of censorship. In spite of this, it remains an influential coming-of-age novel and is a staple piece of literature for many young adults. Wow. So that, a tribute to Sandra Casario, an American Latina writer best known for her acclaimed first novel, The House on Mango Street. I love that name, The House on Mango Street. I think of a fruit. You know, it's very, very interesting. Another a few women that I have here that I want to say happy birthday to, and this is very another interesting woman, I mean, that just took the bull by the horns. I mean, it's amazing what some of these women have done. She was born December 19, 1919, 1 year before the women got the votes. You can imagine what was happening to women at that time. And she made her transition in 2007, and that's Anne Lithenthal, the founder of Plowshares in 1981, actually founder of the Plowshares Fund in 1981, which gave $50 million in grants to promote peace, reduce, and ultimately eliminate nuclear weapons. This woman is another interesting woman, you know. She founded the Plowshare Fund. It's a public grant-making foundation that supports initiatives to prevent the spread and use of nuclear weapons and to prevent conflicts that could lead to their use. Plowshares Funds is a 501c3 foundation that pools contributions from individuals, families, and foundations. It allows and enables individual contributors to pool resources and provide support for their initiatives. And hopefully, they're working very hard to prevent the spread of nuclear weapons. But, you know, right now it's kind of scary what's going on in the world. And this is the largest United States philanthropic foundation focused exclusively to clear nuclear weapons. Well, amazing. Amazing that we even have them. You know, one of the things that really, really frightens me is the fact that there could be a mistake or something could happen. That's why we have to get rid of them. We have to say, no, this was a mistake. We should have never done this. We should have never. I mean, nuclear is very, very dangerous for all of us, as we have seen over the past several decades. Well, this is my last happy birthday, and this is one of my favorite women, who was born December 22nd, 1912, and she passed away in 2007. And that's Claudia Lady Bird Taylor Johnson, the first lady of the United States from 1963 to 69. She advocated for civil rights. She was also the national chair of Head Start. She led the beautification efforts across the country involving environmentalism, conservation, and anti-pollution. And she was known as Lady Bird. And I'll tell you, when you study, this woman is worth reading about. She has done many fabulous things, especially around the environment. You know, oftentimes because of the Vietnam War and some of the cloudiness that happened, President Johnson and Lady Bird Johnson often do not get some of the credit they deserve for some of the things they did. You know, Johnson himself brought in the war on poverty, which she supported and went across the nation talking about. And then she went through this whole beautification program in the White House where she wanted to get all these environmentally different plants and just give an example of what it would look like to have more beauty and a better environment in our culture. So happy birthday, Claudia Lady Bird Taylor Johnson, the first lady from 1963 to 1969. You know, she was not the most beautiful woman in the world, but she had such charisma and such karma. And I'm glad that I can say happy birthday to her, and I hope she can hear us and thank her for all that she did for the environment. Well, that's a lot to think about, and we're at the first segment. Our show is coming to an end, and so we're going to play some music right now. We're going to take a musical break. And since we're going to be talking about Mother Mary and Mary Magdalene and also some of the aspects that Jesus came in with my dear friend Mary Norman, who I'm going to be calling in Eugene, Oregon, I thought we would play a song called Give Yourself to Love, because that's what it's all about. It's all about love. It's all about, you know, the first letter in love is like L, is letting go. You know, just letting go, just opening your heart. You know, the next letter is O, like open your heart. Open your heart to possibilities. You know, and V, you know, be very aware of the fact that how important love is and the various aspects of love. You know, you have mother's love, you have relationship love, you have a love for your dog, for your cat, for your child. All the things that we can love. I mean, you know, some people love French fries. You know, we have all kinds of loves. It's just a variety of things and a variety of ways that we can accept love. And then the last letter in love is E. It's such an enlightening experience. And it gives you so much energy. It takes more energy to hate than it does to love. I mean, that is what is so interesting. It takes much less energy to love than it does to hate. And hate is such a vicious thing. It eats on us. Love just opens our heart to make it. I mean, just when I just say the word love, I just feel good. You know, I want to say the word to Ken. Ken, I love you that you sit here.
I love you.
You know, I mean, it's just amazing. I love my audience out there. I love myself. I love my grandchildren, my daughter. There's so much to love. I love my home. I love my kitchen sink. You know, I don't have to walk 25, 30 miles to get some water. I mean, I love the life. I love our country. There's so much to love. There's so much good in the world. If we would only all join hands and decide that love is going to be the principle, that we are going to follow the guidance of the Prince of Peace that we're celebrating about. Love your neighbor as yourself. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That is the true, true message of love. And even if it takes a day or two, you know, we're in the Christmas spirit. If just for a day or two you can go around loving people. I mean, I was thinking during World War One, they were at war. Oh, of course, World War One, they were at war. Aren't I funny? They were at war, and for Christmas they stopped. They stopped. It just was total silence, so people could have a chance to express themselves in love and compassion. Of course, the next day when Christmas is over, they start killing each other again. But at least there was that one moment where they stopped and they saw the potential. So let's go ahead, Ken. We're going to play this wonderful song, Give Yourself to Love, sung by Shauna Carroll. The song is perfect for the topic we're covering. You know, I'm not a religious person. I think of myself as a spiritual person. In studying, you know, metaphysics, I have come to recognize that there are many stories about many people who help us get through some challenging time. I find these stories about the two women we're about to talk about are inspiring and have given me much strength to move forward with this experience called life. And oftentimes people ask me, they say, wait a minute, I thought you were brought up Jewish. I says, wait a minute, these two women were Jewish. Jesus was Jewish. You know, it's a whole story that we still really haven't quite figured out why it ended up the way that we still don't have justice in our world. We still don't have peace in the world. We're still fighting one another, you know. So I believe in a great spirit. I believe in the great mystery. So that's a lot to focus on. And I truly believe that Jesus was the Prince of Peace, that he was brought to this world. And I don't know, there's so many conflicting stories. Was Jesus real? Was he not real? Did he exist? Did he not? You know, it doesn't matter. What matters is that the greatest words that came forward out of that whole experience was, love your neighbor as yourself. Learn to love yourself so you can love others. It's not a selfish thing. You know, babies love themselves. Let me tell you something. They're very self-centered in their love because they have to survive. But it's just something to think about. When we return, I will be talking with activist, producer of Women's for Social Justice, which I found was one of the best shows at Community Center here had in Sonoma County, Mary Norman. And I'm really looking forward. It's Christmas season, and that's what Mary and I are going to talk about. Anyway, go ahead, Ken. We're going to go ahead and we're going to play Give Yourself to Love, sung by Shauna Carroll.
When people gather around, there's something I must say. What brings us together here has blessed us all this day. Love has made a circle that holds us all inside, where strangers are as family and loneliness can't hide. And you must give yourself to love. If love is what you're after, open up your heart to the tears and the laughter, and give yourself to love. Give yourself to love. I'll walk these mountains in the rain. I'll learn to love the wind. Been up before the sun arises to watch the day begin. I always knew I'd find you, but I never did know how. Now like sunshine on a cloudy day, you stand before me now. Must give yourself to love. If love is what you're after, open up your heart to the tears and the laughter, and give yourself to love. Give yourself to love. Now love is born in fire. It's planted like a seed. Love can't give you everything, but it'll give you what you need. Love comes when you are ready, and it comes when you're afraid. It'll be your greatest teacher, the best friend you have made. And you must give yourself to love. If love is what you're after, open up your heart to the tears and the laughter. Give yourself to love. Give yourself to love. Give yourself to love. Give yourself to love.
You know, many of us become overwhelmed with Christmas. You know, we have to give presents, blah, blah, blah. You know, everybody's running around like a chicken without a head sometimes. But, you know, what we're really doing is we're giving ourselves to love. You know, we want to show love, appreciation, a little gift, a family gathering, all these wonderful things that happen. You know, don't let it get you down. You know, materialism is not the answer. That's not what Christmas is about. Christmas is about giving yourself to love, celebrating the Prince of Peace. It's a very important holiday on so many levels. But we have to look at it a little bit deeper, and that's why I think it's important to what we're going to look at this morning. Well, for you folks just joining, I want to remind my listeners, the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of the station, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And joining me on the phone from Eugene, Oregon, is my dear friend, Sister Mary Norman. Welcome, Mary. Welcome to, boy, it's been a long time to get you on this show. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, I'm just loving it. I mean, this is going to be a great topic. You know, before we start, I'd like to tell my viewers just a little bit about you. And I'm just so proud to know you. You know, you're just one of these women. You're always exploring, reading, you know, trying to improve yourself, trying to and educating me on so many levels. And I just want to thank you for that. Well, let's go here. Mary has a longtime interest in human rights and social justice. She joined many immigrant groups, including Stop Proposition 187, Pueblos Unidos and the North Bay Organizing Project here in Santa Rosa, California. Mary is a bilingual and bicultural teacher. While she worked on her teaching credential at Cal State LA, she studied liberation theology, which is something that Matthew Fox is very, very open about that, as a member of the Christian-based community at Our Lady, Queen of Angels. Mary received her degree in psychology from Sonoma State University, and she's very interested in in-depth psychology. She went on to teach English as a second language at Santa Rosa Junior College for over 12 years. While living in Santa Rosa, she joined the Community Media Center of the North Bay and produced her TV series called Voices for Social Justice. She did over 100 shows interviewing activists from the Santa Rosa area. And I got to say that there are many of these shows. If you look up Mary Norman or Voices for Social Justice, there are many of these shows are on YouTube, and they are well worth listening to. Mary, is there anything else that you would like to add, my friend?
Well, I would just like to say I liked the beginning of the introduction because I took a different path in my life. And learning liberation theology in Southern California was at the time when the refugees were coming from El Salvador, and the church was a sanctuary church. And I became very involved with social justice issues as a result of a deep faith and a deep vision I had that we're supposed to be working for the kingdom, bringing the kingdom to the earth. And that's what Father Kennedy was doing when he brought the refugees into the church. So the idea of being able to face the hard facts about history, which in this case was the U.S. involvement in El Salvador.
Well, sounds like it was a real mind-opener, a heart-opener for you.
It really was, and I love the song that you played, Give Yourself to Love. You know, love endures all. Love endures pain and initiation and dismemberment. And I think we're in a collective initiation right now.
Well, Mary, let's start a little bit. Let me make a little comment here, because Christmas is just around the corner. And from my understanding, we're celebrating the birth of the Prince of Peace, who had two powerful women in his life, Mary, his mother, and Mary Magdalene, one of the followers and disciples. And there was also a lot of confusion around her, exactly what her position was. And I thought that to discuss these two women might help women understand a little bit deeper of what they actually represent and their impact. So begin our conversation. Let's talk about, you know, how did you first discover Mary, Mother of Jesus, and what impact did he have on you and the difference of our idea of her role versus Mary Magdalena?
Well, that's a huge question, but I was raised Catholic. I went to Catholic school for 12 years, and the name of our school was Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary. So from the beginning...
Can you talk a little louder, Mary?
Oh, sure. The idea that I went to Catholic school, and we had, in May, we had the Maypole and the statue of Mary and putting a crown of flowers on the head of Mary. Mary was part of my early religious education, and she just became a friend. You know, one of the most beautiful things about Mary is that she is accessible. She's actually part of us, and she has to do with the nurturing and the... But also, since Mary is like an archetypal energy, she has the dark and the light. And one of the things is that Mary stood at the cross, and she had the strength and the courage to hold that energy. And I think the earth, many people on the earth are carrying a cross right now with the war in the Ukraine and all the weapons. There's a beautiful movie. It was called Fatima, and it was about the children, the three children in Portugal who had the vision of Mary. And it was during the World War One, and there's horrible casualties from World War One, and three children, Jacinta, Lucia, and Diego, they went to...
Mary, you're going to have to come close to the phone.
Okay, I'm right here. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, now it's better. Go ahead.
Well, anyway, Mary appeared to the children because the children had faith. And through the faith of the children, she brought about many miracles in Fatima. And she also brought an end to the war. Mary is present in cataclysms and holocausts. Mary is right there in the middle of it. And the compassion and the sorrow and the desire to bring peace into the war, into the middle of conflict, is possible with Mary. But the idea that the children had faith and that there was the appearance of Mary during World War One, in the darkest of the dark. So just to say that she's part of the dawn. Mary is the dawn of the new age, but she's present in the dark and through suffering.
Well, it sounds like what you're saying is that she's got these mother instincts. She's the mother, you know, the nurturer, taking care of, you know, what you when the story goes that she was at the cross with Jesus, that she stayed there, that she had the courage. It makes me think of when a mother, all of a sudden a child is stuck under a car or something, then a mother suddenly has this energy to just pick it up, you know, and save that child. It's just, there's something in us and that she brings out, especially giving birth to a child that eventually moves on to bigger and better things in that culture. Well, talk a little bit about, you know, there's the second Mary, and of course you're the third Mary, you know, and Ken's mother's name is Mary, and I mean, we're just surrounded by Mary. Talk a little bit about Mary Magdalena. You know, there's so much controversy about her. Number one, there was a book of Mary that has not part of the Gospels or even part of religion, and she's kind of the mystery, like, who was she? I mean, she was a disciple, but she was still a woman, you know, and there was a lot of stuff going on. Talk a little bit about her. Who was she? What was the impact that she had as far as women go?
Well, the first time we meet Mary in the Gospel is in the Gospel of Luke, and she met Christ in Capernaum, and in Capernaum...
Mary, come closer to the phone again.
I'm as close as I can get.
Okay, bring your voice up, love. Go ahead.
Okay. Mary, according to the Gospel of Luke, was being stoned. In other words, she was an outcast. She was a marginal woman. And it is the story that Christ cast out seven demons from Mary. So one of the confusions about the demons is that if a woman was cast out of demons, then everybody just assumed she was a whore. But that's not true necessarily. And so, but the fact is that she was a marginalized woman, and one of the main attributes of the ministry of Jesus was that he loved all people, and he did not, he brought the people from the margins into the center. And so, in that sense, I think Mary Magdalene represents the divine feminine that is being brought back in, and the renaissance of the studies and the books on Mary are showing us that she had very special qualities that made her a beloved disciple. And After she went through the exorcisms, she was able to do exorcisms. So when she was like in training, it's like she was exercised by Christ, and then she was able to help him and assist him.
Well,
and
you know, what I find very interesting about her, too, is that there's so much confusion about her. And at the same time, it sounds like she was one of the people that was also trying to bring forward this whole idea. You know, being brought up Jewish myself and discovering that the fact that Jesus was also brought up in a Jewish culture, you know, I had to ask myself, how did this happen? You know, and I began to realize that that when you look at the Old Testament and you look at a lot of the different religions, there's a lot of just talk going on. You know, this is the way, there's all kinds of traditions. And what they were trying to say is, wait, put all that aside. Love your neighbor as yourself. And once that happens, it'll be a lot easier to actually follow the traditions, to follow the rules. Would you agree with that?
Well, of course. Love your neighbor as yourself is the golden rule, and do not do unto anyone that which is you wouldn't want to be done unto you. It's not being obeyed, but that's the rule that would bring balance, is if we stopped projecting, you know, our shadow on other people. Love is the answer. It's the answer that requires a lot of care and communication. But, you know, one of the things is that when you feel like you're in trouble or you're in danger, you can call on Mary. That's how it works for me. It's not an academic affair. It's like, I need help, and I need help now. And I call on Mary, and she comes. I can feel her. And the main thing is that we have someone to turn to who is the feminine archetype, who has the compassion, and she can withstand crucifixion.
And you're talking about Mother Mary, right?
Yes, because she was at the foot of the cross. The main thing is she can help us move from our ego into the higher self. And so sometimes when there is extreme suffering, let's say, at the bottom of the cross, she could hold the opposites, and then she could be part of the resurrection.
Well, you know what's so interesting when you hear about that, and you hear, you know, the whole idea of the birth, you know, the virgin birth and all that, and then all of a sudden you realize that women have had such a low standing within religion, within the church, and yet these two women stand out so strong. It to me, it's amazing. So it feels like what you're saying is that you, when you're praying or when you need something and you focus on the idea of Mother Mary, that suddenly she comes to you and you feel that strength build up. You feel, and who knows if it's her coming to you or if it's your strength building up. We really don't know that. The mystery is just to reach out. And I think that's a very, very important message, to reach out, to have these kind of visions of these women in front of you to live up to, you know, as far as with love and compassion. It's a pretty strong statement. Well, Mary, we're coming to the end of a segment now, and if it's okay with you, I'd like to continue this conversation. I also would like to find out your opinions on Christmas and some of the things that you're doing to maybe inspire other people, other thoughts that you might have. And I'm going to play one of my favorite songs. You know, it's a song that was written by John Lennon. But I found a wonderful woman singing it, of course. And it's called, it's the woman that's singing it is Sarah McLachlan, Sarah McLachlan is a Broadway star. I mean, she is just an amazing voice. And I was kind of surprised when I found that she sang this song. It's called Happy Christmas, The War Is Over.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's a great song. And when we return, I will continue my conversation with Mary Norman, activist and producer of the radio show Voices for Social Justice. And we are talking about the two Marys that are really impacting all of us, whether we recognize it or not. And during the Christmas season, I think it's very important that these two women come forward. So let's go ahead and play Happy Christmas, The War Is Over, sung by Sarah McLachlan.
This Christmas, what have you done? Another year over, a new one just
I just love that song written by John Lennon. Oh, my goodness. I mean, happy Christmas. The war is over. If only wars were over, wouldn't that be wonderful? Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm in conversation. Joining me on the phone from Eugene, Oregon, is Mary Norman, who is an activist and the producer of a radio show called Voices for Social Justice. And we are continuing our conversation about Mary, Mother of Jesus, and Mary Magdalena, who was one of his disciples. And we're going to talk right now a little bit about more modern times. Are you there again, Mary?
Yes, I'm here.
Well, welcome back. You know, this is wonderful having you on. And this is a kind of a hard subject to cover. And I just want to let my listening out there, recognize that, yes, you know, it is kind of a religious commentary, maybe of a certain persuasion. But the idea is just to bring forward these two women, because we were two women that were in the church that did have an impact. And also, when you think about women were silenced, these women definitely were not silenced. So, Mary, let's start out. You know, in the late 1800s is when a new thought religion came into play. Talk about the metaphysical aspect of both of these women, and how are they relevant in today's world?
Well, the metaphysical importance is that they establish our connection with the divine on earth. And it's important to realize, and the more I read and the more I study, is that the earth and heaven are together. And so when we unite heaven and earth is when we bring down peace and divinity. And so one of the things about the modern world is, I believe that we're having a paradigm shift, which, you know, was certainly happening in the 1800s and continues. The divine feminine, as represented by Mary and Mary Magdalene, is the paradigm that can bring us out of the patriarchy. And I was studying the other day, one of the reasons, the patriarchy feels it needs to control nature. And that's one of the reasons it feels like it needs to control women. And so part of what we're trying to do is get out of the dominant mode and go into the cooperative mode, like Rian Eisler says in The Chalice in the Blade, is that we want to move beyond the patriarchy, beyond the violence of domination, and into an embrace of the sacred feminine. And this is happening. It's happening in, like, you have ecofeminism, which is the idea that the earth is our mother. The expansion of the idea of the divine feminine goes, you know, back to the Big Bang, because the divine feminine was there with, you know, with the Logos. The Sophia and the Logos were part of the Big Bang, and so the Divine Feminine has always been present, and she's been maligned through history. But the resurgence and the great faith in Mary and in Our Lady of Guadalupe shows that the pre-pagan roots of Christianity are alive and well, and the processions to Mary and the devotions to Mary, and then the association with Mary with activism is that she is the person in the front of the movement for social justice. Because God is justice, and we need Mary to inhabit women, to push out of the dominant paradigm, which is the patriarchy, and to play a song for peace, to make a case for the Prince of Peace. In this case, let's say if there were to be a ceasefire in the war, it would be a moment of peace. Medea Benjamin was, you know, talking, we want negotiations, anything to stop the violence, but the idea of a ceasefire and a moment of peace is that we need to connect heaven and earth.
Well, there's another part here, too, about when you talk about the divine feminism. I just want to clarify that a little bit. The reason that I believe in the divine feminism and the divinity of women is because we've been given the secret of life.
That's right.
Through our bodies, there is not a human being on this earth that has not come through a mother. I mean, I know there's all these different other things, but there's just a minuscule compared to how many women have given birth across the globe. I mean, billions of people, they all came from women. And we have that secret. And the thing that is so mystical to me, I mean, it's so perplexing to me is, and when you talk about the pagans, because the pagans revered women because they acknowledged that aspect of it. That
right.
Yet in the church and so many things, women are silenced. They're told, you know, you're not to speak. It's dominated, like you say, by the patriarchy. And I think the most important thing, particularly when I think of Mary Magdalene, because she was right out there on the forefront with trying to give the message of love, is that women have to stand up because they do have that divinity in them. It's time that they recognize it and they don't become a sheeple, so to speak, that they follow their own hearts and their own instincts. And that's where I feel the divine feminism is very strong. And when you study these two women, particularly Mary Magdalena, you know that the odds of women even having an opportunity to stand up. I mean, in the Jewish religion, there's actually a poem that's written, "Thank God I wasn't born a woman." I mean, how much worse can it get, you know, to silence you? So the next aspect of this, and then as you talk about them, as you talk about Medea Benjamin, as you bring in a lot of these women who are looking at the divinity of their own divinity and speaking out, what do you think is the message in today's world from these two women?
Well, there's a lot of people trying to help people in the Ukraine. There's doctors who've gone. There's peace people who've gone. There's just people who volunteer and they drive into the war zone and they bring people out. There's human rights activists. There are people helping the wounded. The idea is that compassion is present during the darkest time. And it's beautiful to see, you know, during the darkest time, how many heroes there are trying to do the right thing. So in humanity, there's a great reservoir of compassion, and the divine feminine is really at the root of it. But the desire to make a better world through consciousness, through activism, and through pushing the envelope. Peter just was really upset with Mary Magdalene because he couldn't stand the idea of women's leadership. So the main thing is when women push the envelope, like Mary Magdalene did, they're going to get a backlash. And what a backlash, you know. with the, all the patriarchal things that have gone in the church. But the Renaissance of Mary Magdalene with the Gnostic, with Elaine Pagels, all the research, and then Matthew Fox has, you know, done a lot of research on Mary Magdalene, is this bringing, is going back into history and finding the heroes, the sheroes, who can teach us something now. But the main thing is that they had, is that they were facing the patriarchy then. She was facing, you know, if you were a woman, you didn't belong to a man, you were worthless. I mean, there is, you know, there was a lot of marginalization, and there still is. And so the main thing is that we can't be satisfied until we struggle for justice and for equal opportunity and equal rights. And we have to do our part, whatever our part is, whatever the calling is. We can be part of bringing the vision of heaven and earth on, you know, because the reign of, the main thing is that the reign of God has already begun.
Well, it's amazing that you say that, you know, and here we are coming into Christmas. Well, you know, the clock is running very, very quickly, and I want to ask you one last question here. I mean, it's just amazing. And also, just for my listeners, you know, when I look at these two women, I look at them, when I think of what they went through in their times and the times that were happening and how women were really oppressed at that time, so silenced in the church, so silenced, period, they give me energy and strength, and I just want to let that be known. Well, Mary, we're coming to the end of the segment here, and I just like to you to let the listening audience know what how you're celebrating Christmas and what are some of your thoughts, and then we're going to have to say goodbye.
Oh, well, we're just going to have a quiet Christmas here with John, my husband, and my two cats. We have a small Christmas tree that has lights on it, and I have I have Christmas lights in the den, and we like to listen to beautiful music, sometimes Christmas music, and sort of feel the presence of the divine through the sacred music.
I think that's so beautiful. Feel the presence of the divine through the sacred music. You know, that Ken and I have been getting into meditation a lot and listening to a lot of good music, and I find it brings a lot of peace and a lot of comfort.
It does. It does. It helps bring the presence of God.
Well, my dear, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for doing such a great, great interview and talking about it. It's a complicated topic. And one of the things is I didn't want to bring in the scientific or the, you know, the, all the factual stuff. I just wanted to bring in the human perspective of someone like yourself who studies this stuff and who has it in their life. Like you said, you know, you bring the vision of Mary in when you're going, of Mother Mary in when you're going through any kinds of hard times, and how that comforts you. And the most important thing to recognize, no matter what it is, whatever it takes to comfort you, or whatever it is that it takes for you to open your heart to love, that's the most important thing. So thank you so much, Mary Norman. Do you have a website or anything people can get a hold of you?
No, not yet.
Well, keep in touch, because I know, you know, it's wonderful you did this wonderful show, and I hope that you continue it. And I thank you from the bottom of my heart for being on Women's Spaces, and Merry, Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you so much, Elaine. Love to you.
Yeah, and remember, this goes on. This will be online in about 3 or 4 days, and you can listen to your own show.
Excellent. I'm so excited.
And love to John.
Thank you so much.
You take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, that's it for our show. A special thank you to Mary Norman, activist and producer of the radio show Voices for Social Justice. You know, amazing when you talk about these very, very powerful women, you know, Jesus' Mother Mary and Mary Magdalena. I mean, these are heroes to me. You know, when I think of some of the African American women who worked to free slaves, they were inspired by these women. They were able to do all kinds of things because they believed that they were being taken care of by them. You know, remember, Women's Spaces will be aired again this evening at 11 o'clock. I'm really happy that I get to listen to my own show. And also, you know, support Women's Spaces. You know, it's the end of the year. And if you have any extra dollars, don't be shy. Support the station. You know, every little bit helps. I'm so happy to be on the air. And I want to wish everyone a merry, merry, merry Christmas. You know, next week is going to be the last week of the year. And I'm hoping to have a bunch of people on saying, you know, when New Year's resolutions and doing all kinds of things. I might even get Ken to do a little spiel on one of his New Year's resolutions. And, you know, it's Christmas time. You know, remember, it's the birth of the Prince of Peace. And when you're doing something, have that in mind. Send a little love, a little compassion. This is Elaine B. Holt. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
She can wait so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you. Because the woman in your life, the woman in your life, the woman in your life is you.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, December 19th, 2022.